Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO, a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving, gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 386, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you'd like to support the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is Jason Heaton, and I'm joined as ever by my friend and co-host, James Stacey. James, how's vacation treating you?
It's going pretty well. It's been a busy week, as you can imagine. You got a lot of plans to see a lot of people and hang out with family and spend time at the cottage and all that sort of thing. It ends up being a lot of driving around and prepping and making sure you've got ice in the coolers and, you know, and all the other things that you might need. And then we took on a couple projects, which I can get to in a moment. But yeah, I'm well hydrated, a little bit on the light side of sleep. My son decided to have a bit of an upset stomach last night, so I feel for him.
Yeah.
But other than that, really can't complain. It's a really sunny day. I just got a new tube in the front wheel of my bike and should be out for a nice ride once it cools off a little later tonight, which I'm looking forward to. Yeah, everything's pretty good. How about you?
Nice. Yeah, things are going well here. Yeah, we're just plugging along and, you know, just getting further settled here at the house, and I've got some exciting news on the vehicle front. But before we do that, we should do our regular update about the reminder, I guess, about the Toronto Timepiece Show, which is coming up on September 26th and 27th. This has become one of the annual highlights of the TGN calendar, if you will, and hope to see a lot of folks there. I think I'm sure we will, like we have in the past couple of years.
Yep. So we'll have our live show on the 26th, midday on Saturday. We don't have an exact time, but it'll be midday on Saturday, somewhere right or probably within the vicinity of, say, noon. And we'll update that as soon as we have that information. It'll be on the show and shared in the Slack as well. And then we will have our party with Marathon the evening of the 26th, the Saturday night. So those of you who are leaving Sunday, we were able to bump it forward a day this year. They're not doing the award shows again, so we didn't have any conflict on the Saturday night. So it'll be Saturday night. Makes it a little bit easier for folks who might be flying out on the 27th. And that RSVP is not yet ready, but should be in the next couple weeks. And again, no need to reach out or check where it is. We will share it on the Slack and we'll share it in mentions on future episodes when available. But sit tight for the next couple of weeks. It's not something I'm going to work on vacation. We'll get it up and ready and shared, you know, before the end of the month, I would assume. Obviously, the live shows are an absolute blast. You know, another one of these kind of major annual, you know, don't miss it sort of scenes. But, you know, we couldn't be more biased, I suppose.
Last year was so much fun, that whole weekend. But I think, you know, there's just a couple of little tweaks, kind of improvements this year, the things you just mentioned, which are, you know, the marathon party moving to Saturday night. I think that's just going to make the weekend just more doable on several fronts. But come the end of Sunday, it's
awesome.
I personally was a little exhausted, and then to kind of go into a late night party was a little rough. So it'll be kind of fun to do it on Saturday. And then, moving from the first year of the Toronto Timepiece Show to last year to that new venue, especially when it came to the recording of our live episode, it's such a great venue for
It's nuts.
For the show. Yeah. I mean, that auditorium is just, it almost feels too, you know, a little too pro for our level, but it worked out really well.
Way too fancy for us. Oh, yeah for sure. Yeah. No, it was a good time, and I'm very excited about it. We're chatting with the team for the party to make sure that the food, you know, is as good, if not better, than last year. I've got some ideas about how to tweak the beer. I think we've kind of gone too heavy on heavy IPAs, which of course is sort of my knuckleheadery when it comes to beer. But we're going to tweak that a little bit, and might even work with another local brewer down in Toronto to find some nice variety. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, should be great.
But speaking of, actually, we have a fun one. So last year, we drove down to the party on Sunday with the top off of my Jeep.
Yeah.
It then poured, and it was up to our ankles by the time we got back in the Jeep.
That's right.
But you have an addition to one of your vehicles that would kind of solve that problem as well.
So, you know, of the two Land Rovers I have, the one is the 93 Defender. And then the one I probably don't talk about as much is the 76 Series 3, which I've had the longest. And when I bought it, it had a full hardtop on it, and I had it in that configuration for most of its lifetime with me. And then I took it off, I don't know, 3 summers ago, and just kind of had it parts sitting in the basement in the backyard. Never quite sure what to do with it. I was going to build a little garden shed out of it or something. Ended up just selling it on Facebook Marketplace, and was driving the vehicle topless for a long time. And it was the only way it fit in my old garage. And it was great as a topless vehicle. In fact, it felt more nimble and a little quieter, strangely enough, without all that rattling kind of echoey top on it. But it just kind of limited its usability. Like on a really hot day, you're always kind of baking there, you know, like sitting at stop signs and things like your stoplights. And then, you know, rain and cooler weather and that sort of thing. So lo and behold, you know, this local Land Rover group, there was a posting on there of a guy who was selling what's called a half cab or a truck cab for a series vehicle, an 88 inch kind of this short wheelbase Land Rover of that era. And I just leaped on it because these things are incredibly rare. So if you can picture the short wheelbase old Land Rovers, if you put a little truck cab on the front, it just covers the two front seats, you know, the driver and the passenger side, in what looks like a small pickup truck cab, which effectively makes it a very tiny little pickup truck. It kind of, it looks like it should have further, you know, more bed behind the cab, like a proper pickup truck.
It's so cool.
And it just looks like a toy. In any case, these are very rare, especially in the US. And I always felt over the years that if one ever came up for sale, I would grab it. Just because I love the look. I think it's my favorite configuration of Land Rovers. And so I snatched it up, and actually I recognized the seller. It turns out it was the guy that bought my full hardtop. It's kind of a long twisted story that I won't go into, but the guy, he actually ended up selling his Series 2A and wanted to put the hardtop on it to sell it. And then had the spare half cab that he needed to sell. So I bought it. And he brought it over. I asked if he would kindly deliver it, since I didn't really have a way to get it short of driving out there and having him help me put it on. So he drove it over here on Saturday and helped me lift it into place and put it on top of the Land Rover, and kind of gave me some tips on fixing it, you know, with the nuts and bolts and things like that. And then I spent the good part of Saturday kind of tweaking it and tightening things down. And long story short, it's just spectacular. It just changes the look of the vehicle. It changes the ride. I just love it. And the funny thing is it came, he had it freshly painted, you know, during some point during his ownership of it. This beautiful shade of what Land Rover called Grasmere Green, which was one of the heritage colors, and a really old color, with a limestone or off-white roof, top of the roof. And it has these beautiful curved glass kind of three-quarter windows and a sliding rear window, which I just love. I'm just absolutely smitten. I took it out, drove around for some errands yesterday. And the one thing I'm noticing is it reintroduces new creaks and rattles, which, you know, I guess you kind of have to expect that in an old vehicle, especially a Land Rover. But some of them I can live with, and some I just have to fix. And so the rear windows, the sliding glass was rattling in the tracks, and, you know, the felt in the bottom of those tracks kind of gets compressed, and then the windows don't fit quite so snugly. So I ended up cutting a bit of old bicycle inner tube and fitting that under the tracks, and it kind of tightens it up a little bit. And then I had to tighten up some bolts, and there's still work to be done, but it's great. And it kind of keeps me out of the sun. I didn't put the door tops on, so I've still got the little half doors on the side. So it kind of has this, still maintains this airy feel with the rear sliding window open.
Yeah.
The only downside is I feel a little bit bad for Ruby, because she absolutely loves to ride in that vehicle. And every time I start it up, she goes bonkers. Like, even if I'm just running an errand and she's kind of stuck inside the house, I can hear her crying in the house, because she absolutely wants to go everywhere in that thing. And I have a little tether that I hook up to her collar so she doesn't fly out the back. So she rides in the back. And I think now that it has a little truck cab on it, she's a little disappointed because she doesn't get that full open air effect. I mean, she does out the back, but I when I took her out the other day, she had to kind of lean way out and peer around the side of the cab to kind of get the full front view. But I think she'll get used to it, and she can always stick her nose through the sliding glass in the back. So it's been great. And I have no intention of repainting it. I think the Grasmere Green is a nice compliment to the marine blue that the rest of the vehicle is. So yeah, I'm just super excited. It was nothing I intended to spend you know, a fair amount of money on, but I just figured it was a great investment for the future of that vehicle too.
That's cool, man. I'm super happy for you. I showed it to Sarah and she was delighted. It just looks very, very cool. It suits the vehicle really nicely, and it really makes a proportion that doesn't exist in cars anymore.
Yeah.
That, you know, it has the proportions of, like, if you asked a kid to draw a pickup truck, maybe.
Yeah, totally.
it's kind of sweet and cartoonish and kind of suits that vehicle really well.
Yeah.
You know, with the, when you get into the 90s ones, they look like military sort of vehicles. That's why, why I love that yours is white. It has this airiness to it versus a dark one.
Yeah.
And then this one in the blue, and now with the half cab and it being the little pickup, and then with a dog in it, you're just like, man, that's perfect. So for my week, we went up to the cottage, and it's the first time that the Jeep's kind of had much of a workout in a while.
Mm.
we decided to take on the project of building an outdoor shower.
Oh yeah.
On kind of attached to the side of the cottage. I had both of my brothers with me this week. I had the entire family with me, but two of my brothers are quite handy, and this is kind of the world they live in terms of construction and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we had everything we needed. I have enough you know, the plumbing side of it's not that difficult, very straightforward, you know, simple tubing and that sort of thing, and we have water delivery from the lake. So it was really, you know, designing a outdoor shower that made sense for our family and some usefulness to the greater group of people up at the cottage. But part of that, of course, meant like we had to get stuff out of the way because, you know, there's old bikes and a patio thing. And so it was a dump run. The Jeep sat for the better part of like a year-ish, 8 months, yeah. 8-9 months. And then I drove it a little bit. I drove it up to the cottage and it wasn't thrilled about it. So that's, you know, that from where it was in storage with my folks, it's the better part of 3 hours.
Mm.
And it just kind of felt sluggish. And, you know, I think one of the brakes was kind of holding on. Just stuff from sitting, right? It's a 270,000 kilometer 2011 Wrangler.
Yeah.
It doesn't want to sit. It's not going to be good for it. So this week when we were up there, I kind of made a point of using it as much as possible, taking the top off and the front panels, the freedom panels off and that sort of thing. And then I had a chance. I needed to get down to the city for one of my daughter's appointments. And we drove the Jeep down. And while I was down here, I got the oil and the brake fluid changed.
Mm.
And driving back up, it's just, man, I didn't quite realize just how much I missed stick, like driving stick.
Oh, yeah.
And it's such an easy vehicle to drive stick. So you can just kind of beat it up and it, you know, it rewards finesse, but it's definitely not required. It's basically, you know, we're using it like a tractor. It's a farm vehicle now. And you know, it otherwise has a good bill of health. So it got a nice workout and we had to, you know, we took it to the dump. We, you know, delivered a bunch of stuff and it is nice to have those sorts of vehicles in your lives that you can, you know, treat like that when you have to. We stood up this shower. And I just got the plumbing done before we left. So it's gotten a couple of uses, but that was great.
Did the cottage have a shower at all?
Yeah. Originally it was somebody's home, for years, but the bathroom was terrifying. Like as when I was a kid, it was just a place for earwigs and stuff like that. So when we redid the bathroom, we tore everything out and we just figured like a shower is not necessarily that important. And if you really needed one, we have that Nemo bag. You can hang that on a branch on a tree and have a nice shower if you needed to. You know, there's options like that. And then you're in the lake 3-4 times a day, usually. Like,
yeah.
And with an appropriate soap, you can clean up in the lake and that sort of thing. But it was something Sarah had always wanted, and she's celebrating a birthday this month. So we put it together. And I think it's going to be a really nice addition to the space. It wasn't, you know, thankfully because of having access to the help of my brothers wasn't that difficult. We had the majority of it done in a day. And then it was just me figuring out how to tie into the water system at the cottage in a way that would be easy to winterize later.
Oh yeah.
It was a good one. I'm glad we got that done. I'm glad we got a chance to give the Jeep, you know, a proper workout. Cause otherwise it's, you know, it sits up there with its battery disconnected. And just waits a chance to go for another drive.
Is that where it's going to live? Is it?
No, I don't. I think that would deteriorate it pretty hard up there. I just worry about rodents deciding that's where they're going to live. I'm looking into a few options. Sarah and I are also kicking the tires, metaphorically and realistically, on a vintage sports car.
Mm.
That it would be much too early to talk about it. but I'm it's something I gotta try and hint. Drive
that's,
before.
Yeah, that's,
you've seen it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And obviously, I have some enablers in my life that are pushing me in that direction. So at this point, if I'm finding storage space for one vehicle, what's two?
Yeah.
And, you know, a glutton for punishment and complexity. But yeah, it can definitely do the cottage, like April to October, I think would be fine.
Yeah.
I just worry about something deciding that's where it's going to winter, up in the wiring harness or something. My current, you know, quiver of cars is really about the fact that I have one driveway, one spot here in the city and no street parking. Yeah, so,
right.
Yeah, but that one was good. And then the other one, you know, this happened over vacation, which is fine by me, of course, but we finally got that Tudor video live. I've been talking about it since, I don't know, February, I guess. Like, we did the episode with Cole in Switzerland. That was when we were there filming for this. Yeah. And it just, you know, it took a long time, and most of the other outlets that were there got their videos up very quickly. You know, I'm not here to make excuses necessarily. We got it out, and I'm very proud of the manner in which we did it. But it took us a lot longer because Hodinkee's not a video first platform. Mm-hmm. You know, we maintain something like 15 to 25 stories a week. Some of those are videos. We try and do, you know, a talking watches each month. But we are a limited team, and some of these things can take a really long time. And the decision was kind of made a couple of months ago, to make it something that would hopefully stand up as, or like the best possible outcome that we could produce, for this. So it's like a 23, 24, something like that minute video, very sort of in the space of how things get made, videos, kind of walking you through everything from dials to movements to bracelet parts to, cases and all that sort of thing. And you'll see lots of watches that you recognize from the Tudor world. And then all the way up to like final assembly, you know, computerized, robot assisted, you know, stress testing and accuracy testing and all that kind of stuff. So I'm thrilled to finally have it out live. If you're listening and you're from Tudor and you wondered why it took so long, I can, you know, I'm sorry. sometimes these things do just take that long. We wanted it to be the one that people might come back to 2-3 years from now, rather than, you know, a sort of blip on the radar or a social clip or something like that. So that was the decision. It's something I would love to do more of, but it is, as I think is kind of clear, not outside of our wheelhouse necessarily, but outside of our process, our standardized process for sure.
Yeah, I watched the first half last night, and then I watched the second half this morning over breakfast, and showing it to Christy as well. And, you know, she wears a Black Bay 54, and of course I've got the FXD. So it was kind of fun to see where these watches were made. And, you know, I've done my share of kind of watch tours, manufacturers, Omega and IWC and places like that over the years. And I think it's interesting to watch that and look at the level of automation and kind of yawn and say, oh, you know, it's all robotic and machines and not much human interaction. But I think what is striking about a brand like Tudor or Omega or Rolex is that level of technology. Well, a couple of things I'm struck by are the level of technology that goes into the production of these, I mean, let's face it, obsolete objects, you know, like these yeah, optional luxury items, and the level of detail and automation and thought and technology that goes into them is just astounding. And the sheer size of the operation, not only at Tudor, but the entire Swiss industry. I mean, in a country that is so known for watches, that this is, you know, some level of this sort of thing is happening all over the country. And it's just really amazing. And then with regard to a brand like Tudor, the high level of quality that is maintained repeatedly over just thousands and thousands of watches is just incredibly impressive. And you contrast that with probably your trip to Germany. I can remember, you know, going to Minerva and Lange and, you know, places like that over the years. And like,
of course,
that is this very handcrafted stuff that's so in such contrast. And it's just such a different position on the spectrum of watchmaking. And it's neat to see both ends of that. So I look forward to seeing, you know, what comes of your trip to Germany as well, which I'm sure will come later in a few months or whatever. But Yeah, this was really, really, really well done, and I can see why it took so long. I mean, it was professionally put together and quite long as videos like this go.
Yeah, yeah, went for the maximalist option in terms of both timeline and final outcome. And yeah, just to set the expectations clear, there will not be something like this from Lange. There will be pieces of things in this scope, like about how watches are made, about how certain things are done. Yeah. But at Lange's level, they're doing almost everything in their own facility, and there's not a lot of interest in sharing some of those details.
Mm-hmm.
So two entirely different processes, and I don't know of, I certainly have not had that level of access or transparency into the way things are made by a watch brand in my time.
Yeah,
I've definitely been on factory tours where they show you a lot of stuff, but you're not allowed to have cameras. In this, you were allowed to have cameras, you're allowed to ask questions, you could follow up later and make sure that you had all the details correct. If you needed a contact at one of the companies for some wild question, they would do that. You know, I think part of this is the sort of Reddit-esque opinions that Tudors are made in China, or that the Tudor clones that you can buy for a few hundred bucks that are made in China are just as good.
Oh, yeah.
So that was great, and I'm thrilled to have the video out. I hope people enjoy it. I've gotten a lot of very kind feedback on the Slack. Thank you, as always, folks, for you know, checking things out when we publish them and leaving comments. And while we're still on watches, before we get into an array of wacky and wild questions, you want to do a bit of wrist check?
Yeah, sure. I mentioned, I think it was last week, that I received a couple of watches back from service, one of which is the one I have on today, which is the Omega Speedmaster Mark III. I think this one, I was, you know, doing a little research into the history of this particular watch, and these were made only from, I think, 71 to 73 or 74, so a very short production run.
Huh.
For, yeah, I suppose for kind of some obvious reasons, if you just look at the thing, I mean, it's very much of its era.
It's a weirdo.
It's a weirdo.
Yeah.
We and I do believe it now holds the title as the most uncomfortable watch that I own. It is... It's, I mean, I've been wearing it for several days just because it brings me joy to look down and look at it. It's kind of at the same quirky appeal as the Land Rover with the mini cab on it. But, it's not that it's so top heavy. It's a very heavy watch and it's 16 millimeters tall, but it's the curve of the bottom of the case is narrower than my flat wrist is across. And so any strap that I put under those hooded lugs pulls down, it just hits my wrist wrong. It's just, there's no comfortable position for the strap. And it's okay on the bracelet, but then you have to have the bracelet, just that sort of Goldilocks level of tightness where it's not constrictive, but it's tight enough that the watch doesn't flop over. So I put it on this kind of porthole style rubber strap. I don't know who used to make these back in the day. You know, kind of looks like an Isofrain, but and it's a thinner rubber, kind of an old strap that I've had for a long time, and it looks good, and it's okay. But man, I just can't fine tune the fit just right. It's just, I don't know. It's the kind of watch that I'll probably wear for a few days, and then I'll, you know, take it off, and I'll have like kind of these red marks on my wrist for a week, and then I'll forget the pain and pull it out and wear it again at some point. But I'm having fun with it.
This is that time of year to wear big silly watches.
Yeah.
I remain very much a fan of big silly watches. I like a big watch summer for sure. I'm 100% on board for this. And yeah, sometimes watches just have a character that means they're not going to be a daily, but they can still be a delight. You know what I mean? And for me, I'm going in a different direction. I have not taken the Sub Army 200T Hodinkee LE off the Doxa.
Oh.
It's been absolutely, I think, like, thinking about it now that I said that I haven't taken it off, I think I literally have only taken it off in the last week to hand to somebody to show
them. Wow, yeah.
I've slept with it on. Yeah. This is the best loom experience I've had with a Doxa. Mm.
Yeah.
It wears so beautifully because it's tiny.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I know that the 200T is 39 millimeters, but if you haven't had one in person, I would compare this to any of my 36 millimeter watches. Mm. This wears like my vintage Datejust.
Wow.
It's small. It's flat. The bezel's great. The loom is pretty solid. Yeah, I'm just very, very happy with it. I don't know that I'll be taking it off anytime soon.
Yeah.
It's just very easy to wear and has been working out really nicely. And I've found that I don't remember the last time I had a watch that I wore extendedly and throughout times of doing various things where I want to use the bezel, and it was a countdown bezel.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm getting along quite nicely with this one. Huh. Every now and then you have to reverse the math. Who cares? Yeah. Not that big a deal. Yeah. But also when you want to count something down and you set that time to the hand, to the minute hand, it's kind of, that's kind of classy. It's cool. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah.
So yeah, very happy with this watch. As I was with my 200T, to be fair, but this is just, you know, feels a little bit more personal with it being the Hodinkee connection and the coloring and the orange I really like.
Yeah, it's so quirky and special. And I'm seeing so many pictures, Slack, Instagram, the Hodinkee happy hour photo essay that I saw, you know, there was like a wrist shot of like four people wearing one. And
yeah,
it's super cool. I can't wait to see that in person.
Yeah, it's a goodie. I'm excited. Yeah, I mean, we're like 6 weeks away from hanging out again. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what I've got on wrist. And I think that brings us to the Slack crew and A. I was up in the middle of the night last night thinking about how to polish up this intro, which I always find is a mess when I get to it. So I'll keep it as simple as possible. The Slack crew and A is text-based questions from our Slack platform. If you want to be on the Slack platform, but you're not, you can get in for $5 a month. It's a great time. And this will give you an idea as to the quirky characters and exciting trains of thought that exist within the Slack platform. We will read these questions and then we will answer them. And we probably get to, I don't know, six or seven today before the end of the show. So why don't we start off with one from Great Lakes Watch?
Yeah, he says, you both finally get to go on an adventure together. All expenses paid by Hodinkee or Blancpain or some other well-financed company. First caveat is that you both have to contribute to an article once it is all said and done. Where would you both collectively decide to go that would interest you equally for the article? And while on assignment, you both have to bring along two watches from your collections, but for the other person to wear for the entirety of the trip. What two watches are you bringing for the other person? And one last thing, you have to rent just one car for use for any driving needs. What are you renting together? So we didn't discuss this. I mean, this isn't necessarily a collective answer, but I think that's okay. I'm curious to hear where you chose and what watch and car.
Yeah, so the first thing I wanted to do was actually answer, one, Great Lakes Watch, thanks so much for this question. It's a fun one. I had a good time thinking about it. But I wanted to also think about the content we'd be making, this story that we'd have to work on together.
Oh, yeah.
And I think deep down, someday, we need to crack the code on how to do dive watch of the year, like they do performance car of the year, SUV of the year, like P. Cody and all those, where you get like 15 of the best dive watches and, you know, 10 of people who could dive and write and take photos and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them all in one space for a couple of days and just run them through the paces and see who likes what and grade everything and then go from there. It would be amazing to do. Of course, if you're not on our side of the line, incredibly difficult. No brand is going to really want you to compare their watch directly to another watch. You know, we've experienced that with 3-on-3s and stuff like that in the past. And that sort of thing. So it would be a tightrope walk to get everything together. And, you know, you'd also be having to decide what ones don't even make the cut of being part of that program. Like how many watches is it? But I feel like there used to be, Jason, what was the German sport watch magazine or maybe dive watch magazine? Do you remember that one?
Oh,
I'm sure they're still around. I just can't remember what it's called.
Yeah, vaguely.
And for those of you in Germany, I'm really sorry. It's a great magazine that I've held in my hands before. But back in the day, they had like, we took these three dive watches diving.
Yeah.
You know, a high-end Seiko, an Omega, and a Rolex.
Yeah, right, right.
And kind of stacked them up. That'd be rad, but I want to do it with like 10 watches and have it be this like very extended program. And I think to do that, it would be anywhere that would be like warm, really reliable, straightforward diving where we could get the entire boat or run the program ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So a Bonaire, a Cozumel, you know, any of those sorts of areas I think would be fine.
Yeah.
And I think would work really well. And then as far as the watches I'd bring for you, aside from say the 12 or 15 dive watches that we'd be testing, I think I'd bring you that Bell and Ross Andy Digi I've got.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Just be a laugh and totally out of scope for the other ones. You've got to borrow it or, you know, wear it when you're here in September. Cause I'm not getting that much wear out of it. These days. And then I think probably the Pelagos 39. You spend so much time with the FXD on. I'd love like a long-term 39 review from you, like whether or not it would like, you'd like it more than you do, you know, after, you know, checking mine out for a few minutes or whatever. But I think those would be the two watches for me. And then do you want me to do the vehicle now or you want to save that for the, we can do that together at the end.
Yeah, we can save the vehicle. I've got a comment about the watches. I think first of all, yes to the Bell and Ross. The Pelagos 39. In my mind, I have this notion. I mean, I once had one of the kind of the OG Pelagos, you know, the first generation.
The 500s, yeah.
Yeah, the 500s. And, you know, love that watch, et cetera. Moving to the FXD, I kind of feel like, okay, same but different. I like the FXD so much because of its form factor and the strap system. I just have the sense that the 39s is going to be like, kind of feels like other Pelagos. But I'm guessing, judging from kind of your feedback, that you think there's something different enough about it that would feel different. So I'm curious about that.
I think it kind of blends the 500. And this isn't a novel idea for me. Everybody kind of says this, but it kind of blends the 500 meter full fat Pelagos with like your 14060M.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But those would be the two watches I would bring. And I think, you know, take me to a nice stable, cool diving where you can do it not super deep. So we get great photos of all these watches and that sort of thing. And then, yeah, do like a dive watch of the year sort of spread.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like that kind of trip. I had considered a dive trip. I'm glad we both didn't pick dive trips. But the reason I didn't pick a dive trip was, or a specific dive trip, was because of the vehicle thing. I thought, well, diving, like, you don't really need a car. I mean, I guess you can do it in Bonaire, like where it's all shore diving and it has some kind of a cool truck or 4x4. But anyway, so I went with in a different direction. You and I are going to go do a trip to Iceland where we have kind of a variety of things to do. Direct flights, I'm guessing, from Toronto. There certainly is one from Minneapolis. In fact, spoiler alert, I have a trip planned to Iceland in November this year with Christy. We're super excited about that. And I've been there a couple times. And so it's one of those places that has such a variety of activities in such kind of an extreme environment that
for sure,
I thought it would make for a good trip with us. We could actually do some diving there. We can dive between the continental plates at Silfra. We can do some kind of glacier trekking, hiking to hot springs. The driving is just spectacular there anyway. The landscape is just dramatic. And in terms of the watches I'm bringing for you to wear, I'm out of my collection, I'm going to bring two very different pieces, but both I think you love and would love to wear. And one is the Zin 144, the Jubilee edition that I got from Tom Place. Just such a great piece. I wore that for that long swim last week. I mean, it's such a great tool watch. I love it more and more every time I wear it. And then my freshly serviced Blancpain Bathyscaphe, the Hodinkee edition. You know, 38 millimeter. Super comfortable, just classic, kind of under the radar, like just doesn't get noticed except unless you kind of know watches. Very comfortable, very capable, would work great for the dive at Silfra. I just think those would make kind of great, two great kind of Iceland watches.
No doubt.
That's where I landed.
Yeah, I love that. I'm in for all of that. This is great. And a nice AB option to a tropical dive trip.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Definitely.
So, nice compliment for sure. Yeah, all right. So for vehicle, what are we driving around in Iceland? Because I really hope I'm thinking what you're thinking.
Okay. I bet you're not thinking what I'm thinking. We're going to get a, I don't know if they even rent these there. A Porsche 911 Dakar.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah. Not at all what I was expecting.
Yeah. I'm just so smitten with those. I don't know much about them. You know a lot more than I do, but just, I remember when they kind of debuted a few years back, it was like, it just seemed like one of these, the ultimate kind of blend of stuff that I like in a vehicle. I mean, just
sure.
They just look great. And I just can see ripping around on all sorts of road conditions in Iceland with this thing with reckless abandon. And I just think it would make for great kind of photo and video content. You know, certainly space would be limited for any gear we're taking along, but, you know, throw a roof rack on it or have a chase car or something like that.
I think we'd be fine.
I think we'd be fine. Yeah.
So. All right. Well, then I get to pick the support vehicle.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Go for it.
I want a Toyota Hilux, but one of the ones built by this company, Arctic Trucks.
Oh, yeah, right.
Like they got like 37-inch tires, the light bars. You can drive. I think it's I don't know this for certain, but I think that's the one that was prepared for the Top Gear trip to the North Pole. I think that was an Arctic Trucks build.
Oh, yeah.
Again, could have that wrong. It was a very long time ago that happened. But the Arctic Trucks thing looks really cool. And I've never driven a Hilux. They're not for North Americans, sadly. But exceptionally cool thing. And I just think, yeah, if our support, if we're doing a Dakar with like a TGN livery, like imagine a Dakar with the Dazzle camo.
Oh, yes.
And then like a matching bright orange Arctic Trucks on some silly tires. A couple of toys for sure. I think that'd be great.
Yeah.
And then for Bonaire, Cozumel, et cetera, I figured you get off the dive boat, we're going to go eat some iguana stew or whatever it is that evening. And I want to do it in a local Land Cruiser Series 79 pickup.
Mm, okay.
They're just one of the coolest things ever.
Mm-hmm.
I love Series 79s. If you don't know them, it's a Land Cruiser that's kind of like what Jason has now built with his. It's a cab with a pickup. Think a Land Cruiser version of like a Jeep Gladiator, if that's easier. And they're so exceptionally cool.
So good. I just Googled it while you were talking, and the first thing that came up was Toyota of Gambia, like the Toyota dealership in Gambia,
where you can probably buy a 2026 one.
Yes, and they're showing the models available. I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but the single cab, the double cab, the different wheels, very bare bones ones with kind of small wheels and tires, still 4x4, mm-hmm. some with diesel, some with petrol. I mean, just, yeah, these are great. These are so great. Okay. I'm going to get out of that rabbit hole. That's
very, very, very fun thing. They look kind of hilarious. They're a little bit awkward. Actually, what they look like is the Ineos Quartermaster has the weird proportions of a 79 as well on board. Yeah, very fun stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's a great lake to watch. Great question. Let's jump into one from Josher, who asked, what could a CWN2 be? He says, I am wearing and enjoying my CWN1, but would like Jason and James's take on what a potential CWN2 could be. Would it lean more towards a field watch, something on a bracelet, any brands you would be keen to collaborate with? Looking for something, some fun speculation here. Jason, any kind of hopes, dreams for what a CWN2 could be? We got a question kind of like this a little while ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've gone on record as saying we're a little hesitant to kind of get too deep into kind of watch production or, you know, become regular watch designers for various reasons.
Maybe we talk philosophy?
Philosophy, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, just right off the top, I mean, I think it's no secret that we have a kind of a quiver of brands that are very TGN adjacent or that we like that would be potential candidates. And these are by no means any hints that anything's coming because we really don't have any specific plans. But, you know, things we've talked about maybe doing is if we did a CWN2 is try to keep it a little bit more affordable than the CWN1, which as watches go, wasn't horribly overpriced. I felt like at the $1,100 range, it was a good value, and we're very proud of that watch. But something more, even more affordable than that, I think would be great. If possible, maybe an automatic. I don't know. I think that'd be kind of fun to do.
Yeah, I think, you know, from my side, I would speak more to the philosophy of how we would approach a CWN2. And one, I would say, like, doing these programs to run a limited edition or do this, like, we're exceptionally picky because I can see that you can see from the other side that it's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of stress.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's going to complain or find something they don't like or that they didn't have enough time or this or that. So, I mean, at its base level, we need to work with a partner who can allow us a full pre-order. So like you have a month to decide if you want this watch.
Mm-hmm.
As many as are bought is how many will be made.
Yeah.
As much as obviously I have a love and appreciation for limited editions, I'm wearing one on my wrist. I work for Hodinkee. My wife, Sarah, runs the limited edition platform. I'd like the crew to at least know that they had the option of buying it.
Yeah.
No 4 minutes to buy it online. It's, you know, it's something we would offer only to the Slack like you did with the CW or to supporters like we did with the CWN1.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing that's important is I would love to come in under $1,000. Ideally, I mean, the dream would be it would be like $1,000 to your door.
Yeah.
So once the taxes have hit, and whether there's any, you know, that's not going to be for everywhere in the world. But ideally, you know, under $1,000 comfortably would be nice. And then maybe someday there's a one that's more expensive or something like that. But we like value watches, and I honestly think there's a ton of competition at most price points right now.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just lean into one that we like and would buy and kind of bring the stakes down a little bit? As watches feel expensive, it probably makes sense to kind of adjust in a different direction. So that would be something we'd be talking to brands about if they were interested in doing this. And then obviously I've been very clear about this in the past. I don't think people always listen. We're not putting our logo on a dial. That doesn't interest us. It's not the way that I would do it at all, really. That's fine for a t-shirt for $30. I think it's goofy to put a podcast logo on a watch dial when, you know, we're working maybe with a partner who, you know, like CWC is like a real brand that like their watches have been in all sorts of crazy theaters of war and adventures and exploration all over the world. And then we're like, it feels really weird to put our name on the dial.
Yeah.
Or especially the logo, right? If you can be really, really subtle about it, okay, fine. But I think it's so easy to get like cartoonish or really to be like way too pompous about yourself. It's a podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah.
And instead of slapping our logo on the dial, we make it a lot harder, which is where we would preferably like to do something the brand hasn't done before, because I think the value that we bring, that the TGN crew brings, is proving an idea. Like CWC didn't make the TI-300.
Right.
And we came to them and said we would love to do the titanium fixed lugs Monin case. And they said, okay, we'll have to see how that works. Mm-hmm. And we showed that it worked. And I think that's what I would want to do, is kind of offer something that doesn't quite exist, whether it's a combination of a few things that do exist with one evolution. And that's where these things take a lot of time. You know, there's only limited interest, like not unlimited interest from Jason and I. We are not champing at the bit to do another CWN watch. Mm-hmm. We will. I'm sure there will be another one in the future, but we're taking our time.
Always fun to consider. Thanks for that, Joshua.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Next up, we've got a question from Caleb, who asks, do you have a favorite Slack channel? The buy, sell, trade 2 doesn't count when you're doing a collection purge. Adventure is mine by far. It's the most interesting aspect of the TGN community for me. James, what's your favorite Slack channel? What's your go-to?
The ones I jump to pretty quickly are Gear and Makers.
Mm-hmm.
So Makers, we get a lot of like leather craft, 3D printing. That stuff I always just find interesting, and I learn from people and what they're up to and what they're thinking about. And then Gear is just fun. I mean, because it's so open-ended, like almost anything can kind of fall into Gear.
Yeah.
Those are probably the two that I jump to most often
mm-hmm.
these days. How about you?
Yeah, Adventure and Makers are the two that I visit most often. And I think, I guess if I'm honest, the kind of the watch focused channels are the least interesting to me. Maybe, you know, kind of being tangentially still part of the industry and just kind of living and breathing and talking about them a lot on the show. I just kind of want to not necessarily visit those a lot on Slack. So I think what interests me about the Adventure channel and the Makers channel is I've just grown to be in such awe of what so many of our crew get up to. And I'm kind of humbled by that. Yeah. I feel like,
for sure,
you know, when we were doing the podcast almost in a vacuum without this regular direct interaction with our crew, our subscribers, our supporters, you know, it feels like you and I are kind of, we do all this kind of cool stuff and we're going to talk about it and whatever. And it is humbling to suddenly be exposed to like all these people that are listening to us talk and how much more accomplished a lot of them are than we are at so many different things, whether it's,
absolutely,
you know, diving or mountain climbing or endurance sports or, you know, building furniture or, you know, rebuilding a car or things like this that I still aspire to do a lot of or don't, or sure, find too daunting. And to see people doing that stuff on a regular basis is just all over the world is just really awe-inspiring. And I guess I'll throw in also, I do love to visit book club occasionally just for ideas for reading. And then obviously diving. I mean, the diving channel is great. I spend a lot of time there.
So. Yeah, there's some great channels for sure. But yeah, I would agree with that. And I would agree that a lot of what I'm getting from Gear or Makers is like inspiration or even just a feeling like, these guys are doing it, maybe I should try it.
Yeah, right.
Like whatever it might be. And so, yeah, I get a lot of inspiration, and there's a lot of channels, to be clear. So it's hard to pick a favorite, but those are two where I find myself lingering.
Yeah.
More often than just making sure that I have an understanding of, like, you know, what's going on, and most certainly watches or something like that.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for that question, Caleb. Next up, we've got one from Evan L., who said, if you could take an extended sabbatical from the internet, say like 2 to 3 months, would you do it? And if yes, how would you spend your time?
Yes, yes, and yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Oh, boy. Why don't we do that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it would have to include work, because my work isn't exclusively on the internet.
Yeah, right.
But if it was possible to do it without work, then yeah, I would be interested in doing that and seeing if I could kind of reset some of the ways that I'm interfacing with the internet. I'm so thankful to have the Slack, because it means I'm not spending time in sort of the wild part of the world. It's a little bit more of a closed garden.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually quite protective and helpful and that sort of thing. But yeah, I think a break's probably good. And if it was 2 to 3 months and it would include like a proper sabbatical, like I could kind of close my laptop, you know, delete Instagram from my phone and just kind of exist like I did, you know, 20 years ago. Yeah, I think I would try that. And the goal for me, you know, this is all really cliche stuff. I feel like I need to learn a new skill. I don't know what that skill is yet, but it's something I used to be quite proactive about, of just kind of diving into something and see how it goes. And I feel like I'd love to learn a new skill. I'd love to clear a few books off the list. And then for me, 2 to 3 months would be enough to get into like a locked in physical routine.
Oh yeah.
Where I'm not like doing it really well. Like I was pretty good a little while ago about running and lifting weights and that. And then, you know, go to Germany for a week and come home for 2 days and go to New York, and it just all falls apart.
Yeah.
And I think if I, you know, if I was sitting still, quote unquote, for a bit, and it'd be much faster for me to go like, well, not only do I have the half hour, I have even more time. Like maybe I'd take up, I don't know, boxing at a gym locally or something
right,
like that.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, how about you, Jason?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, 2 to 3 months, I'm trying hard not to think of the logistics of it, like how I would actually do that, because, you know, with access to my computer, like I talked a while back about getting the itch a bit to kind of get back into fiction writing and maybe work on another book. And I think 2 to 3 months would be a great, at least, way to get a really good start on it. And without the distractions, because I think that was one problem that I had was when I was writing my first two novels was, you're sitting at a laptop that's connected to the internet. And yes, I could turn off my Wi-Fi, but that's easy to turn back on. And then if I'm researching something that's in the book, it leads to rabbit holes and distractions. And but if there was a logistical way that I could do that, you know, maybe it's just writing on a typewriter instead of a laptop. I think I would do more writing. I think I would dig into kind of getting another book going. You know, certainly, like you said, I'd get a lot more reading done. I also think I realize how much time when I've deleted Instagram from my phone, just how much time I take kind of just mindlessly browsing that, and how much time I gain back if I do get rid of that. And I could see now that I have a garage space, like over the winter, for instance, 2 to 3 months would be a great time to just disassemble and kind of rebuild the gearbox on the Land Rover, or, you know, just kind of rewire it, or, you know, little tasks like that. But also 2 to 3 months without the internet also would mean, and I don't see myself doing this at this stage of life, but 2 to 3 months would be like a long trip somewhere, where if you didn't have internet access, like you could go somewhere fairly remote and have a proper adventure, you know, outside, off the grid. So yeah, those are all kind of intriguing ideas. And I do love the idea of a sabbatical from the internet.
The one thing I would add, as I'm sure somebody is currently typing it into Slack, they do make like portable word processors that don't connect to the internet, that write in on an e-ink screen. There's one called the Free Write Traveler. I've known someone who was working on a book on that. It connects to Wi-Fi only to sync your document, but there's no browser, there's no other tools. It doesn't have any other features. It's just like a keyboard with a little screen in front of it. That folds up. Those are, you know, maybe that's something worth looking into for you, if that would be valuable, instead of having the laptop with all the notifications and the full access to the internet. But I've known people who have had these and like them. It's they call it a portable distraction-free drafting tool.
Huh.
And then I know there's pieces of software that essentially lock you out of the rest of your computer while you're writing. I think there's called Focusrite. And I'm not sure of some of the others, but yeah, the FreeWrite Traveler or its competition might be something worth considering, where you could go and have that and be working on your book, and your book is kind of living in that space only. And then, you know, you're not having the other distractions and that sort of thing. Solid question there, Evan. Thanks so much for that. Next up, we've got one from the K33, who asks, when I'm coming to Australia to visit the Hodinkee Australia team, and would I bring Jason with me? No plans at the moment, but if the math worked out, I'm not going to turn down a field trip to Australia for sure. And of course, Jason would be welcome if he was interested in coming along. If I make it to Australia, we'll do something for TGN as well. Because that's a long way to go, and it would be a lot of fun, I think. But no plans at the moment. The Hodinkee Australia team and presence is very, very new, and is still kind of working through their earliest endeavors in terms of both digital and print. But it's definitely something that could be on the horizon. There's a couple folks that we've kind of kicked around for talking watches that are based out that way, and would be willing to do it, but not willing to do it other places, which is understandable. As it's so far away. So would like to get there someday. I know, Jason, you've been to that part of the world. And any dying need to get back there? Any plans in the short term? Obviously, you have Iceland on the horizon. It's sort of an opposite scenario there.
Yeah, no plans. But I've had a long-standing invitation from some friends in Sydney that they remind me all the time. Like, we've visited you several times. It's time for you to come this way. And It's just a long journey. And I think with two pets, I think pet care, you know, is just kind of become a concern for kind of extended travel, kind of, you know, taking care of that sort of thing. But yeah, I'd love to get down there. And I know that we have a big contingent of TGN crew in Australia.
We
so
do.
That'd be really fun. And just it's such a healthy watch community and such a great place for adventuring and just everything. I mean, you've got diving and wine country and great old vehicles and just beautiful scenery and whatever. So yeah, it's on the list long term.
Good stuff. The K33, thanks so much for that, and we'll keep you posted. You'll be the first to know if it looks like we're getting tickets to come down under.
Yeah.
Next up, we've got one from Jeremy Baramy, who says, you wake up in an alternate world where humans have perfected temporal awareness and thus wristwatches do not exist. However, a different accessory has been universally adopted by males. Don't ask me how, but it's sandwiches. They're all passed down from generation to generation. They patina, and eating a vintage sub is heavenly. figure out the rules on your own. But what is your perfect three sandwich collection? Jason, obviously there's some physics that have been changed here in terms of, I guess, the sandwich doesn't age or rot or decay. My problem is the three sandwiches that I had to have, I would eat for lunch. Today.
Yeah, right.
So you'd have maybe three meals before they were gone. I wouldn't be much of a collector of sandwiches, more of an enthusiast, I suppose. Hopefully they don't cost as much as watches. That part's unclear. Jeremy, this is a wild question. Jason, three sandwiches in a world where you collect sandwiches that you would have to have in your collection.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're right. I would not collect. I would just, I'd be a flipper or a consumer. My three, I mean, they came to mind fairly quickly. I thought this would be a hard question, but it really wasn't actually. And this sets aside the fact that I don't eat cheese anymore, because all of these have cheese. Well, two out of the three have cheese and a lot of meat. And, anyway, I'll get started here. A Reuben. I haven't had a Reuben in years. Delicious rye bread, sandwich. Sauerkraut, corned beef, Swiss cheese, you know, a drizzle of Thousand Island dressing, just go full. I don't know. Just classic Reuben. I love a good Reuben. Banh mi. I don't know if you've been. There's a banh mi place near the office in New York, near the Hodinkee office.
Yeah, banh mi Saigon. It's incredible.
Okay. Yeah. I love banh mi.
The bread's too hard. Rips up your mouth. But
it does. It tears up your palate. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I do love banh mi, especially kind of a spicy one. And then the third one is, man, I miss grilled cheese, man. Grilled cheese sandwich is the most basic grilled cheese sandwich, you know, just some bread,
great
butter,
sandwich.
Grilled
yeah.
cheddar, not too sharp of a cheddar, best served with a bowl of tomato soup. Those are my three.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. No, that's the three great choices. For mine, I'm going Philly cheesesteak. And
never warmed up to those.
You know, oh, I'm a big fan. They're absolutely incredible, especially like in and around Philly. Like, you know, we have a Jersey Mike's here, and they do a great job, let's be fair, to Jersey Mike's. But there's some spots near Sarah's parents that are just fantastic. It's good that they're not close by, because these are not, this is not, none of my three sandwiches are even close to healthy. Not even close. The next one's chicken parm. I love a chicken parm. It's basically a Philly cheesesteak, just with, you know, from a different part of town.
Yeah.
Different idea. Same idea, different idea. You know what I mean? And then finally, French dip. I love a French dip, you know, shaved beef on a on the right piece of bread, maybe a little bit of garlic in there, and then like the au jus to dip in. So those would be my three for sure. But really, we're just talking about sandwiches we'd love to eat.
Yeah.
Which is a good one. So thanks so much for that one, Jeremy. A fun one, a weird one for sure, but a fun one. Jason, you want to hit this one from Shane R. about straps?
Yeah, he's asking what our go-to places or websites are to purchase NATO and rubber or FKM straps. He's looking into options that hide the excess strap so it doesn't have to keep back around or, you know, loop it back through the keepers. And he says, love the podcast and thanks in advance. You're welcome, Shane. Thanks for the love. James, I have way too many straps. I just don't really buy many anymore. So I had kind of a hard time coming up with current options. I guess I'll just go first and just throw a few names out there. I've Crown and Buckle's been a long time go-to for me. They just, for NATOs, they just, the Matte Supreme is one of my favorites.
One Redux, of my faves, for sure.
Does some also great on my stuff. List.
These are all ones you're still going to have to like fold over though.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Watches that Espionage. They're doing some great stuff. I mean, it's not really a merch forward website, but they're churning out some great straps. Artem, it's not even a strap type that Shane was asking about, but the sailcloth stuff from Artem is great and worth a look.
Yep.
And our good buddy Nick from Strap Habit, who helped us with our CW and inspired strap, even though that one you also have to curve back. But hey, look, you know, you can always take a dime, trace around it and cut and then seal the edges to shorten a NATO strap. That's the tip I learned way back in the forum days and still rely on. So those are kind of my go-tos.
Yeah. And then the only other ones, like, cause I had Watch of Espionage, Crown and Buckle, Strap Habit, Redux, Erica's. There's no fold back on an Erica's.
Yeah. Yeah.
If there's an idea, you know, you can always check cheap NATO straps. They do a nice job.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's a version, it's the same like architecture as the Tudor strap. I believe it's a Crown and Buckle. I think it's called the Chevron. Whatever it is, I'll put it in the show notes. And that one allows you to adjust the strap so that there isn't any fold over.
That's a good call.
You can the strap has all these little areas you can kind of adjust the sizing and that sort of thing. So that would be one. I wear a lot of NATOs. I wear our NATO a lot, the standard gray NATO for TGN, and I love that they fold over. So we might just not be in the same wavelength as far as what we want from a strap.
Yeah.
So I might not be the best one to answer. And then as far as FKM, I avoid it as much as possible. I'm not a big fan unless it's quite expensive. When it comes to rubber straps, I either buy like interesting ones on Amazon that I'm curious about and I'll wear them for a bit. Or I do the like buy once, cry once. And my current favorites would be the Marathon three-piece strap is amazing for the money. It's a great strap. Right up there with any expensive OEM, Breitling, Omega, all that kind of stuff. It's that level of quality. So in that case, it feels less expensive, but it's very much an expensive, costly sort of rubber strap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm actually not averse to FKM. And I think in terms of my go-tos for kind of rubber adjacent straps would be Zeeland. Zeeeland makes a great strap. I've got one on my Seamaster. Sure. Don't forget about the Strap Tailor over in the UK. Known mainly for leather straps, but he does a few kind of cool rubber straps as well. So there's plenty of options for you to check out.
Yeah, the last one is Anchor Strap Co. They do a sort of deployant NATO that I believe doesn't have a tail.
Oh, okay.
So that might be worth checking as well. I have seen those in person and they are very nice. I get their Instagram ads. I'll put that in the show notes. I'm almost positive that's what it is.
Yeah.
So thanks very much for that question, Shane. And Jason, you want to hit the final one here?
Yeah, we've got a last kind of appropriately final question from Scott O. who says, the idea of an exit watch gets kicked around now and then, a watch that's so perfect for you that you stop looking at getting new watches. With the understanding that you can change your mind in the future, what non-watch things do you have in your life that you would consider as exit level? He adds that he has a Miata that feels like his exit fun car. He doesn't have any desire to be shopping for another hobby car if it would require him to part with the Miata. Yeah, good question. It's a great concept. I've long loved the idea of an exit watch or an exit something. What about you? Mm-hmm. Do you have anything non-watch related that you consider exit product?
Yeah, probably. I've got cameras. Like I think whatever happens in my life, I can't imagine my M10 not being the camera that I would use for my life that isn't taking photos of watches. Mm-hmm. It's that level. I think it'll go down as sort of a classic even in the digital world. And I know people say that these things become obsolete and that sort of thing. I think the 10, in my mind, at least gets to the point where I can't imagine needing a lot more from it.
Yeah.
It's serviceable. It's something you can have fixed if it needs to be fixed. I don't need more resolution. I already have some lenses. So that one feels very strong to me. Sleeping pads. I've got, Therm-a-Rest Neo Air X-Therms. I'm not buying more sleeping pads. They're perfect. They're the expensive, nice one. I've got lots of great flashlights. I have several Mouchants. So if I want to pick up a flashlight that I know is quite literally the end game of flashlights, mm-hmm. I've got that. I've got a GMX from a Giant Mouse knife, and I can't imagine, like, every time I go look at a Chris Reeves or whatever it may be, I go, yeah, but it's going to do the same thing that this does.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love it. It's just such a pretty, well-made, could easily be the sort of thing. It's definitely the sort of thing that keeps me from buying more knives, for sure. The Planet Earth shirt. I don't need another field shirt.
So true.
Ever, yeah. I don't think.
Yeah.
I would love to, I'll probably one day, if I get lucky enough and there's a sale and it's in my size and all that, I'd love a green or a tan one, mm-hmm. not a black one.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'd be buying it only for the color.
Yeah.
Backpacks. I've probably good. you got me the Dyneema GORUCK bullet. That's not going anywhere. That's an end game backpack for sure. I've got a GR2 Heritage.
Yeah, that's cool.
From GORUCK as well. I like both of those a lot. Those are the things that leap to mind for sure.
Yeah, that's a good list. This is actually a really timely question for me because as I'm moving and I've been purging a lot, I've just come to realize how many multiples of so many things that I have that I just don't need. And I'm kind of at this point in my life where I'm just not in acquisition mode. I don't know if it's my age or kind of the fact that I'm moving or something, but so it really kind of drives home what it is that I do want to keep. When it comes to, like, I think clothing is the one thing I used to buy a lot more of. And I think once I kind of settled into what I like, and I think the Planet Earth shirt was one of them that was on my list, but you give me that shirt, a good pair of like Fjällräven Vita Pro pants or the Kebs, and then a pair of Blundstone boots. I'm good. Like, I'm good for clothing, at least, kind of in the shoulder seasons in the winter, with a good commando sweater. I really don't need much more. I just don't want to keep buying multiples of, boots and pants and that sort of thing. So yep. With that, watch on my wrist, and then Land Rover would be, for my non-watch kind of exit vehicle. I think I'm set. I think I'm good. I can't decide if that would be the Defender or the Series. I think if I had to push came to shove, it's hard to pick between the kids, but the Defender would go, and I think I would just keep the Series. It's just kind of more fun and quirky and collectible and unique.
It's also that step closer to a sports car. What I mean?
Like, yeah,
top
yeah.
off if you want.
Right, with some utility to it. Yeah,
all that kind
it's
of
really,
thing.
Yeah.
For sure.
But in terms of other stuff, I think camera, I think, we made a trade. I got the Q. I can't see, why I'd buy another camera at this point. I'm just kind of not in that game anymore. And it just kind of does everything I need it to. That's about it. I think, when I look around at what I'm, my touch points every day, it's a watch, it's a vehicle, it's my clothes and a pair of footwear and that sort of thing. So
that's great. Perfect. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for that question, Scott O. And also to Shane, Jeremy, the K33. Evan, Caleb, Josher, and Great Lakes Watch for all your questions. It's always a blast that we've got maybe, I don't know, 80 more to get to in the next little while. But this kind of concludes round three, and we'll jump into some final notes, put a bow on it.
All right, I'll jump in first. This is a recommendation of a person to follow or read, and maybe most of you have heard of her, Ava Zubeck. I was actually kind of introduced to her by a neighbor who saw me out tinkering with my Land Rover on the side of the road at my old house. And he said, you know, you've ever heard of Ava Zubeck? She's kind of a Land Rover personality. She's this woman, I believe she's from Poland, but she was educated in the UK. I would say she's probably in her early 30s. She has a very popular YouTube channel, and she's written a book recently. And then Sidetracked magazine just did kind of an online profile of her as well. And I just think she's a great follow. She's, you could call her an influencer or kind of one of these kind of travel personalities, but I think she's got more depth than a lot of them. She has a certain kind of realism to it. I think some of the kind of the promotional aspects of her videos feel a little bit sensationalist, but once you kind of watch the long form stuff, she's quite brave. I mean, for a single younger woman to kind of go across, you know, areas of the Sahara Desert or drive the Dalton Highway in a early 2000s Defender completely on her own is a pretty bold thing for anybody. And she kind of does all this kind of self-documenting, and she travels with her really cool dog, Vilk, I think is the dog's name, that she kind of trained to be a self-protection dog. I kind of like her delivery, and she goes on some really amazing adventures, not just in her Land Rover, but also she's done kind of, she did like an ultra marathon across Mongolia. And she does some kind of cool stuff and with kind of a really raw, very personal style of delivery. So we'll throw, the link to her YouTube channel, in the show notes, as well as this article about her on Sidetracked.
Very cool. Yeah. She's brand new to me, but, I have now subscribed. And I look forward to checking out some of these videos. These look very exciting.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, what do you got? You got a pump here, an air pump.
Yeah, an air pump. So, you know, it's a perennial thing. This time of year comes around, you want to do some camping, or in my case, you want to pump up kayaks or even, you know, air mattress for a family visiting and that sort of thing. You always have these cheap ones that they sell at, like, you know, Canadian Tire or whatever. That are fine, and maybe they have like a cigarette adapter to plug them in for the car. I wanted something that was more of like the polished, nice option.
Yeah.
that kind of had a lot of flexibility. It could do, you know, beach toys, it could do more heavy duty stuff. And all of the reviews kind of kept pushing me back to this one. I mean, Flextail is a well-known company, and they make a few different pumps, but they're the one I ended up going with is the larger of the options, called the Max Pump 3.
Mm-hmm.
It's tiny, to be clear. It's it'd be, you know, maybe the size of two espresso cups would be
smaller
than a bottle of pills, smaller than it's tiny, and it has a little clip on the top so you can hang it, because it's both a very high performance battery powered pump. Mm-hmm. For all sorts of things, even up to, like, I blew up two kayaks with it.
Huh.
It couldn't get them like fully rigid. These are those like Challengers, Intec Challenger kayaks I bought
mm-hmm.
a while back. But like to do the first 80%,
yeah,
had no trouble.
Hmm.
Seemed like light work for it. And then there's another button, and the sort of profile, the where it comes to a bit of a point on one end, is also a lantern your tent.
Yeah.
And it's this like nice warm light with a few different levels of brightness from an LED. And I'm just very impressed. For, I think I paid about 55, 60 Canadian dollars. But it is one of these Amazon things where I'm not sure of the price in every territory. But it's probably around 45 to 60 bucks wherever you are.
Yeah.
And if you are doing, you know, mattress pads when you're sleeping, like when you're camping, if you're doing, you know, the occasional, you know, bed or beach toys, all that kind of stuff, really handy, really small, charges on USB-C, and it's a lantern. I'm impressed. It's a cool thing.
It's great. Even on their website, they show someone using it to kind of like a bellows to pump up a, you know, blow on the campfire.
That's another one you can do for sure.
Yeah, it's cool. A good exit pump. To go back to.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe you'd need more. I don't think I do. You still had to use the hand pump for the last little bit for the kayaks, but that's okay. Yeah. No big deal. But hey, there you go. A whole episode.
Good stuff.
As always, thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly, which would get you into the Slack, and you could be part of the next time we do a big round of questions, which will be for next year. But there's lots of action in the Slack all the time, and you can even get yourself a new TGN signed NATO, depending on the level of support. Just visit thegraynato.com for more details. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from Françoise Sagan, who said, "Curiosity is the beginning of all wisdom."